We're biking down the Mississippi today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Melissa Melnick is in the middle of a personal journey. We'll ask her about that on Scribble.
Melissa, it's nice to have you here. I came across you just by accident this morning in church and thought that since you're writing a book, you are fair game for this Scribble program, though at the moment you are in the middle of a journey down the Mississippi River.
Yes.
Tell us about that and how that came about.
Well, on April 25th of 2017, I got the word that my son was probably lost in the Mississippi River in Minneapolis. And it took 10 days to find him. And so during those, well, Chris, his name was Chris, and he was set to graduate from the University of Minnesota in a couple of weeks. And his plan had been to work for a couple of months with Wilderness Inquiry, who does canoe trips with all different people of all different abilities and things. And then he was going to take this epic adventure and bike down the Mississippi River Trail. And so while he was lost in the river, I decided during those 10 days that I would do this ride either in celebration with him or in memory of him. And so I do this ride in memory of Chris.
But I understand you're not only doing this, but you are you have a blog that and from that blog and your notes, you're going to write about this?
Well, people have been asking me for quite a while now. Chris wrote a lot of poetry, so people started asking me if I would publish some of his poetry. And then because I've been blogging about my own grief and that journey through grief, and now with this bike ride, people have been asking me if I'd write some kind of a book about this. And so as I have so many hours on my bike, I have a working title for a book. Do you want to hear what it is?
Oh, yes.
It's called The Middle-Aged Woman's Guide to Biking the Mississippi River.
That'll take up the cover.
I'm not very good at titles. They're a little long.
Do you think you'll stick with that title? Or is in some way, I mean, you're not even halfway through your trip yet, but
right.
Has it begun to change you in ways you didn't expect? Or
the trip?
Yes.
Oh, definitely. It was sort of this nebulous idea that I had. And I'm, first of all, not a biker. And so I had to buy a bike last year. And then I've been training this year. And I knew that things would be different than I thought. I sort of had this vague notion of what would happen. And so some of my friends actually drove down today and they said, "Wow, you've gotten a long way. We never thought you would get this far." And I think I didn't necessarily know I would get this far either. And so pushing some limits and just feeling God's presence and Chris's presence with me gives me something to focus on.
Well, you know, you could improve the title by starting with, "This is a book about." That way you could run over under the back cover.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this bike ride, at first I called it the Chris Stanley Mississippi River Memorial Bike Ride. And then it's Chris wrote a poem called "This Bus is Fueled by Love." And I took that poem and renamed it "This Bike is Fueled by Love." And one of my friends said, "Oh," she called it the Fueled by Love Bike Tour. So these are how things, people help me with the titles. I'm not that great with those.
How about Memories on Wheels?
Well, I've thought of Wisdom on Wheels.
That's not bad.
No. Yeah, so I'm sure, like the first chapter that I've thought of as I'm driving is Jesus, My Bike, and Me.
And you are a minister, aren't you?
I am, yes.
Tell us how that obtained. How did you enter the ministry?
I was actually a teacher for a lot of years. I taught Spanish and English as a second language, and I thought I would be going back to do my doctorate in curriculum and instruction. And I was sitting in my home church one day with my younger son, Austin, by my side and Chris running around the balconies. And this sounds kind of strange, but I sort of saw this light come on the altar and this angel chorus kind of went, whoa. And I said, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. So I call that the knock on the head, call for those of us who were not paying attention.
You know, when I see angels and they sing, I just dive for cover.
Yeah, for me, it was sort of this revelation, and it was instantaneous. And so,
how did you pursue this new career?
Well, it actually took me some years. So to use my biblical reference, I was like Jonah, who ran away, and then the whale swallowed him. So I tried really hard to run the other way, and that didn't work. And so it took me a little while, and then I did 4 years at Luther Seminary in St. Paul and became a pastor. And I've been ordained almost 4 years now, and I started a congregation that is in English and Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So you tempt me to ask whether this voyage is a trip toward or a trip away from.
Oh, I suppose it's both. We actually, Chris was cremated with a water-based type of cremation that I think they only do at 2 funeral homes in the nation. And he was an avid cyclist and an environmentalist. And so we put his ashes in an eco-friendly urn and biodegradable. And we sent him from a place in St. Paul called Hidden Falls. And so he's actually part of the river. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's more of a going along.
And well, you use the word journey, but there are all sorts of ways of going from one point to another. You can are you on a voyage, or are you on a pilgrimage, or an adventure, or an exploration, or a discovery, or... What would you call it, subtitled?
Yeah, I think pilgrimage is probably the closest. People ask me, am I excited about the trip? And I'm not excited. I never wanted to run a marathon.
Right.
And this was never anything that was a part of what I wanted to do. And so this is just something I feel led to do. And
this trip is going to change as you move downriver.
Yes.
It's one thing to ride through along Illinois and Iowa. You get down to Missouri. Then you're getting into Tennessee and Mississippi and Arkansas and Louisiana. The world changes. The people change. The byways change. And you sure you want to go all the way to New Orleans?
Well, what I've had to do since Chris died is follow the 12-step adage of one day at a time. And so I kind of like the night before, I plan what I'm going to do the next day, and I set out on my journey, and whatever I'm led to that day is what I do. And then lots of times I have the forks in the road that I have to decide about. And so one day at a time. And if I start to think about the end, I can't do today.
Yeah.
and so I really have to follow that very closely so that I can do this. And as far as I get is how far I get.
You can use my mantra, just do the next thing.
Yeah. When I was at Prairie du Chien in Wisconsin, I had to, there was the Iowa side or the Wisconsin side. And I actually ended up getting a flat tire on my bike. So I was going to take the Iowa side, but we had to drive to Dubuque. And I looked at the shoulders on those roads, and I said, oh, no, it's all gravel. I can't do that. So I came back and did the Wisconsin side and now through Illinois, and I'm really glad I did. And so those are the types of decisions that I have to make. People say, oh, but this highway doesn't have a shoulder. And it's kind of like, well, that's where I have to go. And I pray along the way that people are paying attention. So if you're out there and not paying attention, it might be me, so please pay attention.
You better be sure to wear a helmet and maybe some body armor.
Yeah, helmet for sure.
So, Melissa, are you taking notes as you go, or how are you going to back and write the book from?
Yeah, every day when I'm done, I do, you know, Facebook. I do a Facebook Live post, basically kind of how I feel at the end of the day and maybe a couple of highlights. And then I don't take tons of pictures right now because I'm just busy biking, but I take enough pictures, and then I write some reflections at the end of every day. And
then you post these on your blog?
I post these on Facebook right now, and then a friend of mine is helping put this on a website. And so I have kind of multiple ways of keeping track of what's going on.
Melissa, I want to ask you about your son's poetry.
Yes.
Is that going to find a way into your book?
Definitely.
Yeah, I would think that would give you a different structure, that the book that you write is probably going to be a unique structure, and that will recommend it, I think. But does he leave much poetry?
I have probably 4 to 5 years worth of poetry and other writings that he did, and he was very much like me, except that he was much more disciplined, and so he wrote almost every single day. And so he self-published a couple of poetry books, and I have both of those. And then, thankfully, his computer was open when he was lost in the river. And so I was able to download all of the poetry that he had written on his computer. And then I have a box full of his journals. So I have all of his handwritten poetry, and he even wrote down his dreams. And so I'm blessed in that way to have these writings from Chris that pour out his heart, and so
I could see a way in which you could use the poems as a way of structuring the whole book.
Oh yeah.
Rather than to day one, day two, day three.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, this is Prairie du Chien.
Yeah, not chronological at all. I'm not really a chronological kind of thinker, even though that's how I'm documenting right now. But more of themes or I'm not quite sure, but something in my brain. My younger son writes as well, and so somehow incorporating the way Chris writes, he wrote quite differently than I do. I'm more of an essayist, and Chris was a poet, and so yeah, I haven't quite figured it out. I have a friend who's a published author. She's published something like 32 children's books. And she's offered to help, and she thought maybe the Minnesota Historical Society. Who knows? I shouldn't say that out there, but if you're listening.
You know, it's a good thing you're moving on, because poet, he's not a poet, that's Roald. Roald and I would probably brainstorm with you for hours on titles, like Riding with a Poet, or, you know, Downriver with a Poet or something.
Well, I'll have to come back and visit you when I'm done.
I'm not saying he will give you anything useful, but we can certainly carry on about it, though. Because titles are such interesting things that you can, you can pique a person's interest with a title. I mentioned before, after my wife's death, I saw a book, Where'd You Go, Bernadette, which was her name, and I thought, well, I have to buy that book.
Definitely.
And next to it was Gone Girl, so sure, why not? Two very different books, I might add. But, you mentioned your church. Is it a mission? Is it a church that's on the way to becoming one? How would you characterize it?
Well, I started it 4 years ago, and a lot of people would refer to it as a church plant. And so we are multicultural and bilingual, and I would say we're kind of taking off in some ways. And one of the things that one of our people came up with is we all talk about building bridges, but we try to cross the bridges. And so we're all about, and that fits in with this ride too, you know, all the bridges that I'm crossing. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, the Mississippi is metaphorical for the divisions in our country. And one of the things about Chris was he was still young, of course, and had that youthful optimism and hope. And so I try the best that I can to show that there is hope even in the midst of tragedy and sorrow. And that love is greater than the things that divide.
So do you have a particular reader in mind for? I mean, I'm sure you're writing it for yourself, but who else? Who do you imagine reading this book?
Well, my friends.
I did that.
Don't count on it.
I did that, and I couldn't sell the books, you know.
I think that people who've had some kind of great loss, and that, of course, is a lot of us, but people who... I know that not every parent who's lost a child can make a journey like this, and in some ways I make this journey for all of those parents, too. They talk about it being this club that no one wants to join. And so it's, and we don't want anyone else to join it.
Yeah. Is your church under some denomination?
Yeah, it's part of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, or the ELCA. So it's Lutheran, and yeah.
I mean, do they know what you're doing?
Oh, yeah. you know, we have a lot of immigrants in our community, and they know, they understand loss in ways that a lot of other people don't. And so, and they knew my son, and they loved him, too. And so they've been walking with me on this entire journey. They've helped me plan. Some of them are going to come and bike or drive for part of it with me. They're worshiping tonight, and they sent me all these pictures and calls, and so they're very much with me in spirit, and I'm with them, and I'm blessed to be a pastor in this community that, you know, they understand my humanity. They didn't expect me to hold back my tears, and they cried with me, and they've held me up through this time, and so they're very much walking with me as much as they can on this journey.
I'm going to say, you're riding with a crowd, aren't you?
I am. It is not just me. There's no way I could do this ride alone.
How do you manage that, though? Do you systematically, at the end of the day, sit down and write?
So before I go to bed, I'm a fast writer on my phone and in the computer. And so on Facebook, I put in probably 3 or 4 paragraphs a night of my highlights from the day. And I actually do one day in English and the next day in Spanish. And I ask people to use Google Translate, which isn't the greatest thing. But one of the things, I am very fluent in Spanish. I've been speaking it for, I don't know, almost 40 years now. But I've found that grief is hard for me to do in Spanish. And so... But I sit down and I reflect on the day and try not to do like today I did blah, blah, blah. But, like one day I was riding up this really incredibly long hill and I thought, oh, can I make it? Where's the end? And a vulture, I know.
Make it or else.
Well, that wasn't exactly what I was thinking, but
I was going to say, is this like the angels?
Well, you know, a vulture flew out over... Just one random vulture, and I said, oh, that's where the top of the hill is. And
death awaits.
Well, somebody was asking me about that, and so you'll have to fact check me on this, but I think that vultures have gotten a bad name. So I think they actually have some, I don't know much about birds or things like that, but they have sort of accompanied me on this journey.
You know, one day I noticed the neighborhood standing in the street staring at my son's house next door. And I went out, and there were 6 vultures perched on his house. I said, you better come out and take a look at this. You may be getting a message.
Yeah.
Melissa, you must have imagined the trip before you took it. What's the most different thing that's happened that you did not expect?
Well, actually, probably so far, the most surprising thing was that it was maybe 2 or 3 nights in, I send Facebook messages or whatever to pastors along the way. And in Stockholm, Wisconsin, we stayed in a alpaca farm. And so I said, wow, I never thought in a million years that this would be part of our journey. And so we got to pet the alpacas. They say they have personalities like kittens, and they came up and kissed me and everything.
Normally they spit.
Yeah.
Well, llamas more.
Llamas do, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. But I'm thinking in the back of my mind as we talk, how's she going to organize this book? Roald is right. Day to day is not going to get it. And I'm thinking that if you scout through your son's poems, you can find a subject and relate it to some aspect of your journey, either a particular stretch or an overarching idea or something, and chapter by chapter, move by poem. And I think that would really work. I'm not a publisher, so don't take my word on anything.
Yeah.
But that suggests itself to me right away.
Yeah, I've thought about that. One of I don't know if this would be the particular place that I would do this, but one thing I had thought of is sort of a meditation journal or something like that that would have some of his reflections and some of my reflections and maybe some other things in there. So, but yeah, I have to really think through things, and I have so many hours on a bike that I can begin more and more to think about structure.
Have you met people with their own stories along the way?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's so much grief and so much grief that isn't talked about. And so we met somebody last night who she and her two sons, I believe, own a restaurant here. And the mom helps. And so she lost her daughter 5 years ago. And there's just this instant connection when I meet another
mom. So how do you meet them?
Oh, it just happens randomly. Well, one thing is I have green hair. and I don't normally have green hair, but I had a goal and a challenge over the summer. If I could ride 1,000 training miles by my birthday on August 14th and be sponsored $1 a mile for fundraising, then I would cut my hair short and color it green. So this opens up, of course, conversations.
You know, this would make perfect sense if you were in Wisconsin. This is the Packers' 100th year in football.
I'm not really a football fan, but if I were, I would be for the Vikings, I have to say.
Well, they tied when they played the Packers. So no one won, but then no one lost.
Yes.
But that is a very attractive set of hair.
Thank you. But yeah, it opens up conversations, and if people will just say, oh, that's a long bike ride, that's exciting, and I'll just say, well, I'm doing it in memory of my son. And so I try to be pretty honest and forthright with the reason for my ride, and then and I tell people, I know my hair looks crazy, but there's nothing crazier than losing your child. Mm-hmm. And some people then find a way that they can share their stories. One of the first times I preached after Chris was lost and he had died, I was at a congregation outside of Minneapolis, and a couple came up to me and said, our daughter died, I don't remember if it was 20 or 40 years ago, and we have never talked about it since. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this opens up some avenues, and it might not be a child dying, but some great loss that people have experienced. And people say, thank you for being so open. And I just think, I don't even know how to be different. And so I think because I'm just open and with my feelings and also with my heart and with my ears, then people can open up to me, and I guess they sense that.
Isn't this what a pastor does? I mean, it's true. If you suffered a loss like that, and there is no more terrible loss than a parent losing a child. And as I get older and older, and my kids get old too, I think, well, now, wait a minute, you know, slow down, kids. Mm-hmm. Give me a chance to make an exit before you do.
Yeah.
But that is the most profound loss of all, I think. I remember my older brother died when I was 4 and he was 15. Mm-hmm. And that marked our family in a significant way.
It does, yeah.
It made my life just easy as pie because I was the sole surviving son.
Mm-hmm.
But still, as a pastor, you will talk about things that most people would not talk about, because it does take a little opening to address those things. And it's like, for some people, it'd be like tearing open a scar. And to be able to do it and hold your countenance and deal with it forthrightly, that is a pastoral skill that is invaluable. And I can understand why people would open up to you. But it must cost you a little bit, too.
It does to some extent. But as I'm on this journey, one of the things is that I get to tell my story. And I get to share Chris's words. And this is a real gift for me. And so I think sometimes pastors were put on a pedestal and we're not supposed to cry and we're not supposed to really express our pain or break open our scars. And so I've been gifted with the opportunity to do that. And it's such a blessing to me. And so I want to be able to share that with other people.
How long is this going to take you?
I'm planning on taking 8 weeks for the trip. So I'm 2 weeks in, one quarter of the way. And yes, like I said, if I think too far ahead, I'll stop. But I just think about tomorrow.
But at least, you know, you're moving away from where winter makes its mark. You don't want to be biking on snowy roads.
A lot of people do, but I won't. But I am, you know, it's fall, September, October. Fall is beautiful in Minnesota. And when I get back, I will be back pretty much right in time for blustery November. So, but I'll be on my, I assume that it will get warmer as I go farther south.
How do you get back?
I'll drive back. Some people from my congregation are planning to drive down. My younger son will drive down, and other people might fly in, and we'll have a celebration in New Orleans and go to the shoreline there and have a water ceremony. There's an Anishinaabe leader from Minnesota who gave me water from the a glacier, fresh water, and so I've been carrying that with me as well. And so when we get there, we will also have some kind of a water ceremony.
I can recommend some nice restaurants in St. Louis.
Oh, okay, good.
And the Hotel Monte Leone is an old one in the French Quarter. It's a great place to stay, okay. Though. Public radio people meet there once a year. Yeah, back in the day when I was a manager, we'd go there in the winter, and it was wonderful.
Good to know.
But 8 weeks, are you sure you've given yourself enough time?
Nope. I have this has been broken up into increments of 150 to maybe 225 miles per week. Mm-hmm. And those of us planning this do not know the area. So far I'm just slightly behind on my itinerary, but I'll make that up. I'm just scheduled to go to Quincy by the end of this week. And so I think that should be just fine.
I was going to say, do you take every weekend off?
What I'm hoping to do is take Wednesdays off and Sundays off of biking, and then I have been preaching along the way. So Sundays off of biking, but still preaching.
Do you make your plans for preaching ahead of time?
Well, I had Pastor Stacy opened her church and her doors to me a fair while ago, and the pastor in La Crosse. And I just set up something for next week in Quincy, and my friend is a pastor in New Orleans. So some I have, and some are kind of last minute. And I say, hey, I'm coming through. Can I preach? And then they look at my story and say, oh, okay.
Well, as long as it's not on a street corner. I must say.
You never know.
Melissa Melnick, you have a
I think the title should be The Acts of Melissa.
Well, anyway, we thank you very much for visiting with us. It's been very interesting. And bon voyage, Melissa.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure to speak with you both.
It is our pleasure. And that'll do it for this week. Plan to join us next week when we have another guest on the next edition of Scribble.